Welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is your host, Cyrus Alderwood. Today, March 16th, 2021. You know what happened to this day in history? Shit, I don't know. I forgot to look it up before I hit record. We'll do that next time. You know, hell, maybe we'll do it before the show's over. Two things today. Two really weird things. So, like, strap in. Hold on to your ass, folks. This is going to get weird. We're going to talk about pirates. And Julius Caesar. Did you know that Julius Caesar was actually abducted by pirates, the high seas, before he took command? Interesting story. I'm gonna spill the beans on that one to you. And we're going to talk about this cat who claimed he worked at NASA for many, many years, especially through the Apollo missions, and claims that he actually saw a 7-foot alien talking with astronauts docked to their ship in space. NASA has not denied this. So like I said, hold on to your ass or other assorted bits and pieces. It gets a little weird. Turn the music down a little bit. Thanks to those cool cats in Blues Hammer of Norfolk, Virginia for letting me use some kick-ass bumper music from their first independently recorded album. Blues Hammer, B-L-U-Z-H-A-M-M-E-R. Go look those cats up on Facebook. I'm sure they've got some place out there where you can actually buy their CD, maybe get some swag. Not for nothing, but like those guys are pretty freaking cool. Good sound, too. Independently recorded album out there. And, well, now that things are kind of starting to get back to normal, they're out playing live. So if you get a chance to catch them, go have a little fun. Buy a shot of Jaeger for that crazy bastard that sings, Pat C. Blows the harp. Actually, tell him Cyrus Alderwood sent you. But anyway, thanks again for tuning in to another episode here today. I'm not sure how long I'm going to rant. Maybe 15 minutes. Maybe longer. I don't know. What's going on in the news this week? It's Tuesday. Have we canceled anybody out? I mean, we pretty much went after Dr. Seuss last week, the week before. We put a disclaimer up in front of the Muppets now because, holy shit, they might be offensive. And like, they're just like kicking ass on everything in my childhood. You know what's sad is some of the funniest comedians ever that came out of a bygone era. You wouldn't be able to. They couldn't perform today. They couldn't. You couldn't make. Mel Brooks couldn't make movies today. Blazing Saddles, one of the funniest damn movies I've ever seen in my life. Kentucky Fried Movie. These things couldn't be made today. People would shit their pants. Well, you know what? Most people wouldn't. Most people are like you and I. They have a sense of humor. They have some thick skin. They're not looking to be offended by any damn thing coming and going. And I salute you for that, you know. And you probably listened to me go on a few rants about this stuff on previous podcasts. So thanks for hanging in there. I mean, unless you're one of those fringe folks on like the 5% on either end of the spectrum that are the loudest assholes in the room, especially on Twitter, because God knows I'll get ripped on Twitter on occasion. For writing a book, no less. Had some asshole insult me one day for writing Revelation Calling. And after looking at what some of this guy tweets, it's like, dude, you're not even literate enough to finish reading that book. I didn't say anything. I took the high road. Have a nice day, Captain. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. But, yeah, man, who are we canceling this week? I'm expecting people to actually go after the Dalai Lama. You know that guy had to have been an asshole to somebody at some point, maybe accidentally copped a feel. I mean, you're not blatant like Cuomo, So it's not Governor Cuomo, who's apparently had they're calling for him to resign, and he won't. He just like the governor of Virginia should have resigned a long time ago. Or wearing blackface, but he won't. These people are just like hungry for power. Those are the people I don't trust. Yeah, let's cancel the Dalai Lama this week. Let's find, let's dig up something he said or done. Does that guy have a Twitter account? You know he's an asshole to somebody at some point. Let's hammer that home. He said something insensitive to somebody, hurt some feelings. Yeah, come on, folks. Yeah, you guys all get it. You guys all get it. I don't have to rant about that too much. But you know what? In this world, nothing gets canceled. And we live in America. Who the hell bans anything in America? Yeah, Disney might want to be a real puss and just like put these disclaimers up. Yeah, we all know these cartoons were made in different times, different eras. Yeah, Dr. Seuss probably had some, you know, interesting comments against various people in some of his cartoons. But let me kind of back up and be clear about Dr. Seuss. I don't think necessarily the left-wing mob canceled him. They caught on to the fact and started bitching about it. I think probably the folks there at the folks who own the Dr. Seuss franchise decided for themselves to pull some books. That's fine. I mean, they have the right to do that too. You know, I'm not going to complain. But you know what? By doing that, they actually managed to get a lot of books sold on Amazon. So a lot of people jumped out there and started buying a lot of Dr. Seuss. Maybe I should say one of my books is really offensive. I'm going to pull it offline. So you guys better rush out and buy Tales from the Sunset Pub, because God knows, I'm sure I offended about 10 different groups in that book. It's comedy. But anyway, I've reserved the right. I've pulled books off that I've had before, not because of anything offensive. Like, you know, I'm not going to apologize for things I've done or said. I mean, unless I've been like a real asshole. And if that's the case, I'll just apologize to the person I offended. I don't know the rest of the masses, any kind of apologies, but, I've pulled books off because I didn't like the quality of them years later, and I wanted to do rewrites, and thought didn't work I did 15 years ago doesn't represent the work that I do now. And thankfully, you know, I can do that. And I did that with, 4 books. I reissued the first one, Grave Legends. So I've got the other 3. You'll get Grave Legends 2 this year. You know, we had an interesting conversation yesterday with Gary Kwapis. He's been on the podcast before. And I was talking about during 2020 when everything was locked down, you'd think that I would have gotten tons done, tons of writing. Nothing. It's like nothing hit me. Like, I did sporadically here and there, and I hoped to be more productive, but I wasn't. And here this year, I'm like forced to try to get 2 books out, and I just started I kind of got back in the investment advising business, so I started a company with a colleague of mine, and you know, I've spent a lot of time doing that, so now I'm like pressed to find time to get 2 books out. I'm working on Gonzo Chronicles 3, and of course, Grave Legends book 2. That book's already written, I'm just doing rewrites. But, you know, you think last year would have been productive, and it really was not. I felt busy, but I wasn't productive, and man, that is a hard pill to swallow, looking back on it. But that's me. What about you guys? Did you guys feel something similar, or where I work independent? Like last year, I was just kind of trying to promote books, couldn't do any book signings. So basically, my year was just kind of shot. But a lot of people still had jobs to go to or work from home. And how did you guys get through 2020? Through the lockdowns. I'd love to hear some feedback on that. Like, how did you guys, was there a lot of, you know, was there depression? Was there frustration? Did you lose your job? Have to go out and find another? A lot of people were in rough shape last year. But yeah, if you want to share those stories, I'd love to hear them. Even if it's anonymous, I'll maybe read some of them online and or on the next podcast. It's you can email me at cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com. And we could talk about it a little bit. I want to thank this past weekend we recorded a show for Rabbit in Red Radio. I was on Father Mahoney's House of Horrors. So I want to thank Rob Mahoney for having me on his show. I'm not sure when it's going to be released. It's probably sometime this week. But, you know, it was an hour-long show. We had a great time just, you know, talking about different aspects of the horror industry, movies, books, you know, kind of running the whole nine yards. Remakes, what remakes we liked and didn't. I'm not giving away too much of that, but if you find, I'll actually, when it goes live, I will post that link up on my Facebook page. And also, if you get an opportunity, it's go to facebook.com/ The Cyrus Alderwood. Make sure you go there, because I'm going to actually post up links and stuff from today's discussion that you'll want to go take a look at yourself, because I think you're going to find this really fascinating. Also, the new logo, want to toss a shout out to IHaveYouCovered.net. Thanks to Emily for doing a great job on that. I get complimented on the logo. Everybody said, yeah, that last logo was kind of boring and sucked, but your new logo is great. So thanks to IHaveYouCovered.net. Make sure you check out that website if you need anything as far as logos for your own shows, even just kind of logos that you want to have for your social media. It's relatively inexpensive, and it's great work. So check it out. Make sure you give her some business. She does a great job. And also, there's a book that's called What Happens the Day After. And I want you to look that up on Amazon. And that's by Teresa St. Francis. We'll be having her on the podcast soon. I'd mentioned her a couple times previously. But I want you to get a chance. If you get a chance and you're interested in the book, read the blurb. If you like the book and the concept, she's a fascinating lady. I've talked to her a couple times on the phone. I'm probably going to give her a call later on this week, and we'll schedule a time to do the podcast. But take a look at her book. As you're reading that book, if you have any questions you want me to ask her during the podcast, drop me an email. Again, cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com. Or connect with me on social media and send me a direct message. I do get a lot of direct messages, but just put, you know, podcast show or something up first, so I notice what you're asking, so I'll pay attention to it. But that's going to be a really, really interesting show. Usually what I like to do is, when I know I'm having a guest, I'll jot down some questions that I want to ask. And in this instance, I decided not to do that. I started reading her book. I got her book in and started reading her book. And as you know, I've mentioned on a previous show, I went through a really rough period of time here recently. And, you know, I lost my sister to COVID. My other sister, she had COVID, but she recovered fine and she's doing okay. But unfortunately, 3 weeks after we lost our sister, she lost her husband to COVID and pneumonia. And he put up one hell of a fight, you know. And this has been really a heartbreaking, heart-wrenching time. And, you know, those of us that are left in our little tribe, you know, we come together and we're close. But, you know, reading that book from Teresa St. Francis really kind of put some perspective on things. And I decided I didn't want to jot down a list of questions. I just wanted the conversation to be as organic as it could be. And where she leads that conversation and where my mind goes as we question, I just wanted it to be real. Not that any discussion I have with anybody is not real anyway. Sometimes I don't have a list of questions. It's somebody I may be familiar with anyway, but, I wanted it to be as organic and real as possible. Because I wanted the listeners that when we do that show to feel it. So, we'll be doing that hopefully soon. And if you have any questions you wanted me to ask, fire them over to my email, and I'll make sure I have a list of those as the conversation progresses, and we'll have a Q&A session, I'm sure, toward the end. It's going to be I've heard her on other podcasts, on other shows, and I think you're really going to enjoy that conversation for those who believe in afterlife. So it's going to be a She's a powerful lady. She really is. All right, so let's jump into what we wanted to talk. Actually, I stumbled on this on Facebook about Julius Caesar was kidnapped by freaking pirates. And this is the craziest thing. Now, piracy, as you know, has been, this goes back to ancient times. Now, in the Mediterranean, pirates were not really a big threat. They could be kept in check, usually because, you know, surrounding countries had a strong navy. But by the 2nd century BC, piracy became a lot more rampant, very dangerous. It was destabilizing the region, especially in the eastern part of it. And it continued until the 1st century BC, before Pompey ended it. So here's one of the weirdest stories that came out of this. Now, there's some history about how the lack of a naval power left the Mediterranean defenseless. But I'm not going to really get into that. I will post a link up for you to look at. It's off ancientorigins.net. I've mentioned this website a couple times on the show. I'm absolutely fascinated by everything I read on this. But anyway, at one point, pirates, known specifically as the Cilician pirates, they kidnapped the future dictator of Rome, Julius freaking Caesar. Now, why the hell would they do that, huh? Well, they didn't know who they had. So let's be quite honest. One of the pirates, like it says here, one of the pirates' most notable hostages was Julius Caesar. In 75 BC, the future Roman dictator, who was only 25 years old at the time, he was captured by these pirates while on his way to Rhodes to study oratory. Now, the pirates were, you know, they were chippy. They kidnapped this guy. They demand a ransom of 20 talents. And I guess that's, you know, obviously units of wealth and money back then. So what did Julius Caesar do? Laughed his ass off at him. They said they didn't know who he was. He's offended by their dumbass request for ransom of 20 talents. He offered to pay him 50 talents and just let him go. But they decided, you know, they're going to keep him. So he did not act like a captive the entire time. The 38 days, apparently, they had him held hostage. He did not act like a captive. Actually, he acted like he owned the joint. For instance, when he wanted to sleep, he would tell these people to shut up, that he was trying to sleep. They had no right to keep him awake, to go out somewhere else on the ship and leave him be, right? When he would recite his poems or speeches, if they didn't appreciate his poems, this guy was reading them the riot act. It's like he was seriously, you know, riding their asses if they didn't appreciate what the work he'd done. He even threatened, and he would laugh at him while he was threatening this. He threatened apparently many times during the 38 days that they held him captive, that he was going to have every one of them hanged. And they thought he was just kind of funny. I mean, they tolerated him because they thought it was just kind of funny. Let's keep this crazy bastard around, right? It's what they're thinking. And, you know, just kind of thought it was just him being, you know, young and, you know, thought he owned the world, and he didn't. They didn't know who he was. Well, eventually the ransom arrived, and Caesar was set free. And he was set free at a place called Miletus, which you've probably heard of in history. So immediately, Caesar took command of some of the ships once he was set free. And he set sail from the harbor against the pirates. When he found them, he had them captured, put in prison in a place called Pergamon. And at that point, Caesar decided he was going to allow Marcus Junius, who was the governor of Asia, that territory to punish the pirates himself, because that was his jurisdiction. Well, the governor, he was kind of indecisive, waffled about how to punish these guys. Caesar's decided, hey, you know, this, I'm just going to take matters into my own hands. So he had the pirates taken out of prison. And what did he do to these pirates? He didn't hang them. Crucified their asses. I'm not kidding. So not long after his kidnapping, Rome sent out expeditions against all these pirates. And especially the pirates in Cilicia. Although he was able to defeat them at sea, he was unable to deal like a killing blow to piracy. Because war had broke out between Rome and, I'm going to butcher this up, but Mithridates, at Pontus. So there was a war that broke out between them and Rome and another territory. So additionally, the pirates of Crete were attacked by Quintus Caecilius, and the island became a Roman province in 67 BC. Now, the end of the Cilician pirates actually came not long after the fall of Crete, apparently, according to what I'm reading. And the pirates were actually threatening the food supply of Rome. Pompey was actually given enormous powers to fight these pirates. So the pirates had already been defeated some years back, but Pompey didn't really have a big task to accomplish by defeating the putting them out, kind of like what we did with ISIS. It didn't take long to defeat ISIS under a new administration. So unlike Caesar, though, Pompey treated the pirates really differently. They understood that after they lost their base in Cilicia, they were just drifting around. So instead of putting them to death, he decided to break their hearts. No more freedom. He settled them inland and made them serve Rome as farmers. So the pirates were no longer a problem for Rome. Instead, they were working their asses off in slavery to feed Rome. That's an interesting story. I'd never heard that until just maybe a couple days ago. But I'm sure a lot of you that you've heard, that stick around and listen to my podcast, you're kind of fascinated by crazy history too. And that's cool. There's another really, really interesting story that I stumbled upon because I was on the blackvault.com. My God, if you ever want to go down a rabbit hole, just go on that website, and you will be down a rabbit hole until you can't dig out. So I'm going to drop a name on you, and if you want to take a second to look it up on the internet while you're listening on your phone, by all means do so. I'm going to post some links up on social media so that you'll have it. Clark C. McClelland. Apparently, he worked for NASA. That's McClelland. So go take a second to look that up. I'd power some music on here again, but I shut the damn app down. While you're looking that up, if you're looking it up, I'm just going to ask, what is everybody listening to? What's on your playlist this week? I have a friend that we kind of do old school. We write letters once in a while. Drop them in the mail. It's like, hey, this is my playlist for the week. It's what I'm listening to while I'm writing or researching stocks or whatever. This week I've had The Doors on my playlist. Believe it or not, I popped out some Typo Negative. I haven't listened to them in a long time. And Gray Days. Actually, I've just pulled up some videos on YouTube. And Gray Days. Actually, if you've heard of Linkin Park, you know what happened to their singer. The singer actually used to be the singer for a band called Gray Days. And they recorded a new album. And one of our previous guests, Heidi Gadd, is on that album. And so is a guy by the name of Mace Byers, who was cool as hell, who was nice as hell to call me up, him and Heidi, after my sister passed. And just kind of didn't talk about any of that. Just goofy as hell, cheered me up and... that was a much needed conversation, and I can't say thanks enough for people who reached out. And some of you that listen, I know regular listeners reached out on social media too. So thanks. Thanks a ton, man. Hopefully everybody else has had a great holiday season, and we're in March. Spring is almost here, and I freaking cannot wait. And I don't care what they say from the White House, whoever's in charge. If I want to have everyone in the neighborhood in my backyard for a cookout, damn it, I'm going to do it. Just because it's America, and that's what we do. Anybody tells us what we can't do, they pretty much get the finger. I don't care, Democrat, Republican. Nah, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Enjoy your holidays. Hug your relatives. Hug your friends. Like it's the last time you'll ever see them, pal, because you never know. So take advantage of every moment. Every freaking moment. So Clark C. McClelland, who is this cat, right? Clark was assigned to the 1958 Super Space Program in Cape Canaveral. And over the course of his career, he's launched and been a part of a team of hundreds of spacecraft that's been launched into space. He's he was the aerospace engineer and technical assistant that took part in the launch of the Apollo program and even worked on numerous spacecraft as the operator. Now, in recent years, he's come to light He has a step forward about numerous spacecraft that were considered UFOs. Does that mean it's alien? Not necessarily, but while things aren't from this, you know, but I think, let me back up here. There are things of this world that we think are UFOs and probably aren't. A lot of military stuff, a lot of psyops that are done to make people see things. And sometimes genuinely things that we can't explain doesn't mean they're UFO or alien. Doesn't mean they're not of this earth. We just can't explain them. And that's okay. That's the difference between people who are investigators for real and people who are just like are folly like me. I'm fascinated by, you know, UFOs and the possibility of life existing outside of Earth. Clark never claims that what he saw was never, you know, that what he saw was alien per se, but he never said it wasn't. However, when I tell you a little bit about what he saw, I don't know how you can deny that it's not a space alien. Now, this is according to Clark C. McClelland. And there's actually, I think you probably found this cat on Wikipedia, but I'm not. Wikipedia has a lot of errors on a lot of things, unfortunately. But anyway, he was part of the Apollo missions, and he actually, at one point, met Wernher von Braun and overheard some discussion about life outside of Earth that von Braun was aware of. Well, that's crazy, but, you know, it's Wernher von Braun. He was like one of the top people in NASA once he defected from Nazi Germany. Well, he didn't have much of a choice. We went over and got him after the war. But what makes him credible, and I'll get into what he saw here in a minute, he actually wrote a book, and the book was called Stargate Chronicles. And he actually published the first 10 chapters online through Lulu.com, Lulu self-publishing platform, which sucks. I'll never use that platform. I did it early on in my writing back in the early 2000s. I have a beef with that website and those people, and F them, right? However, he went there. I guess he self-published chapters 1 through 10. And it's for, you know, mostly for people who are in the fan space of the UFO phenomenons. But at the same time, the book tells other stories in his career while he was working for NASA and a lot of the training he went through, the different jobs he performed. And so that book was actually a first segment of a final piece that at the time of this website I'm looking at was still being written. But you can actually find, if you go to Amazon.com and do just a search for Clark McClelland, you'll find a book that actually had another author attached to it, because I think Clark McClelland, maybe he's passed or he was in a nursing home or something. So he actually said that he was actually canceled by NASA and the government to, you know, cover up his claims. They erased his pension, according to him. Now, people have approached, I guess, asked NASA, is this guy for real? Did he really work there? They have not claimed he worked there, but they have not denied it yet either. And this is from going years back. And what I'm reading here is from 2017, late 2017. Former NASA astronaut claims he personally witnessed a 9-foot-tall extraterrestrial while on duty. I'm just going to read from this. This is exonews.org. Actually, I'll post this up on social media. This is not my site. I'm just reading from it and, you know, give them credit. Clark C. McClelland, a former SCO of the Space Shuttle Fleet, claims he personally observed an 8 to 9 foot tall extraterrestrial on his monitor while on duty at the Kennedy Space Center's Launch Control Center. He claims the ET was standing upright in the Space Shuttle payload bay, having a discussion with 2 tethered NASA astronauts. He also claims to have observed on his monitors the spacecraft of the ET as it was stabilized safely in orbit to the rear of the Space Shuttle's main engine pods. On McClelland's website, he writes, "How did it communicate? I have no idea. It did move its arms a lot, almost like giving instructions, I heard no voice communications. The helmet was not as large as our two NASA astronauts and had a viewport to look forward. It had a small, perhaps a communication device, attached only to the right side of the helmet. I saw no oxygen tank. It had a wide belt like wrapping around it. It did not appear to be tethered as the two astronauts were to the sides of the shuttle structure. I observed nothing that appeared to be a weapon. The time of this amazing scene was 1 minute and 7 seconds. I timed it on my astronaut chronograph watch. McClellan claims that he was part of hundreds of missions for NASA. Others have vouched for Clark, including ufologist Richard Dolan, sketchy, and Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgell Mitchell. The only reason I say sketchy for Richard Dolan is I've read a couple things that brought his credibility to question over the last 2 to 3 years. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I would defer to some other folks like Heidi Gadd that are, you know, mainstays at UFO Congress and on that. And if we have her back on, when I'm sure she'll come back on sometime. She's just been slam busy. I'll bring that up. However, NASA itself cannot now officially verify that McClellan ever worked there. McClellan claims that the U.S. government stripped him of his pension and his identity as a NASA employee after he spoke out about what he saw. But they've also, I just will add this from other things I've read, they haven't denied he worked there either. All right, they won't verify he worked there, but they won't deny it either. So when they've been asked flat out, would you deny he worked here? No. If you run around in UFO circles, it's kind of a rare thing these days to come across people who aren't at least open to the idea of intelligent life outside in the universe. There's actually, you know, in mainstream scientific community, there's a lot more discussion about the possibility of it, as we've discovered countless planets that have the ability to sustain life. Now, that life question is that intelligent life. Some of these planets have been around a whole hell of a lot longer than Earth, so the likelihood, if there was intelligent life, it'd be much more advanced than us. Some places, not so much, simply because of the environment. You'd have to read various articles that I've, over the years I've read, that make me think that. There was a guy, in the scientific community that believes we're not alone, the director of operations for Bigelow Aerospace, which I think maybe it went under by now, Mike Gold, according to this article, puts it that the universe is most probably teeming with intelligent extraterrestrial life. In fact, top U.S. astronauts recently testified in front of U.S. Congress expressing the same belief. Furthermore, we have a number of scientists, astronauts, astronomers, high-ranking military and political personnel, and academics trying to tell the world that we're not alone, that we have never been, and that intelligent extraterrestrial life has been and is currently visiting our planet and interacting with the human race. So it kind of makes you wonder when you see movies like Men in Black and there's tons of other movies, right? I mean, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Independence Day, any kind of movie where there's alien life that comes to Earth. As much as the CIA has been like just up the ass of Hollywood since the very beginning, kind of makes you wonder if they're actually choreographing certain movies to get people acclimated to a possibility. Well, maybe, because those movies started exploding in the 50s, not long after Roswell. It's a possibility. I think it's a highly likely. But, you know, as we, I guess we go forward, I guess, and research newer cases of UFO sightings, you know, actually there was one not long ago that took place in either New Mexico or Arizona, where an airline pilot claimed that they were flying next to an unidentified flying object that has disappeared. So what used to be taboo when pilots were asked, did you see something? They would say no because they had to write it up and didn't want to look insane. Nowadays, people are open to it. So I guess you as a listener, how open to that concept are you that there's extraterrestrial life, intelligent life? outside of Earth, out in the universe? And furthermore, have we been visited? What is the likelihood that we've been visited? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, there's so many sightings and cases of abduction, which I mentioned on the last episode, that, you know, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire. Yeah, let's get a little bit more interactive with the show, folks. If you're listening, let me know what you think. Fire me a message, and we'll talk about it. Because I think the entire concept is absolutely fascinating. And this guy kind of saying that he spotted on a teleprompter watching, you know, what was going on in space, you know, a minute and a few seconds of a giant alien talking to two tethered astronauts. Like, how are they communicating? You know, I mean, there's so many questions that you'd have to ask. Is there, did their minds link somehow? Was he able to telepathically explain things as he was waving his arms around, this alien apparently talking with its arms and maybe giving instructions? Who knows? I mean, Hollywood could probably give you 10 different answers to that, but what are the real answers and will we ever know? I don't ever expect disclosure to happen. I think people will find, if it's real, people are going to find out on their own from other investigators and just, you know, events that the government can no longer cover up. But it seems like forever, you know, people keep talking, hey, there's disclosure coming, there's disclosure. Nah, don't hold your breath. I don't see it coming from our government. Truth seldom comes from governments. And that's a sad fact. And, you know, it goes across whatever party lines. That's just a sad fact. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. I hope you find these topics as fascinating as I do. And if you have any suggestions for other topics you want me to talk about, let me know. And we'll cover them all. We'll go out and find some guests. And if you have any guest suggestions, let me know. But I certainly appreciate everybody tuning in. Tried not to blather on too long. Under 40 minutes. Not bad. All right, folks. Thanks again for tuning in to the Gonzo Chronicles. Check me out on CyrusAlderwood.com, on social media, and I would appreciate if you'd check me out on Amazon.com. If I sell a handful of books a month, keeps the show running. Thanks again. And if you want a book suggestion, you want to laugh, if you're not the kind to get offended easily, check out Tales from the Sunset Pub. That's some of the most creative crap I've ever written. Thanks again for tuning in, everybody, and I will see you on down the road.